from KQED.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. With ride-hailing companies like Uber and Lyft reinventing the transportation landscape, many taxi drivers are finding themselves without long-term job stability. Grueling hours, declining business, and devaluing taxi medallions have put these workers in dire straits. And we're going to discuss the harsh reality for taxi drivers with Mark Gruber, the San Francisco cab driver for Green Cab, who's here with us in studio. Good morning, Mark Gruber.
Good morning.
Last time I saw you, I think it was about 20 years ago, and you're still a cabbie. Good to have you. Sam Harnett's also with us, Silicon Valley reporter for KQED. Sam, thank you for joining us.
Yep, thanks.
And Vina Dubal, who's here as well, associate professor at UC Hastings College of the Law, who has studied the effects of ride-sharing on the well-being of taxi drivers. Good morning to you.
Thank you for having me.
Let me begin, if I may, with you, Professor Dubal, because I know you've done a lot of research on this, and things have come into the spotlight because of a man named Douglas Schiffer, who was actually a chauffeur driver, a limousine driver in New York, who killed himself. There were three suicides related to this, but his was the result, he said, of the fact that he wasn't going to stand for making chump change any longer and took his life. And he said the reason is the gig economy and Lyft and Uber that's driven him to this. But you've met in your research a lot of people who are really suffering. I mean, they're suffering in the ways of losing possibility of paying their mortgage or getting evicted and so forth. I mean, it's pretty dire, isn't it?
It's extraordinarily dire. Douglas Schiffer's death reminded me of the farmer suicides in India. You know, a political suicide meant to draw attention to a really barbaric economic situation. And what's scary with what's happened in the chauffeur industry, including Uber, Lyft, the taxi industry, is that every day consumers are in the same vehicle as people whose lives are devastated, people who drive for 12, 16, 18 hours a day, but who are not eking out enough money to pay for rent, to put food on the table, who are living the kind of economic lives that, you know, we just don't think of as being possible in America. And they are, consumers have turned kind of a blind eye to that reality because it's so convenient and easy. So I guess for me, the two things that are most devastating about what's happened and what Douglas's death sort of shines a light on is, one, what's actually happening to workers and to people who are in this industry. And who are, and those people are already, you know, amongst the most marginal in society, people who are carved out of wage work. And the second thing is our indifference to it.
In fact, you've said that the people who are involved in taking Uber and Lyft may, I think you used the word complicitous.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, this has long been the case in the garment industry. We buy clothes from companies who subcontract to factories in Bangladesh, where the conditions for child labor are just grotesque, and we are complicit there. But at least those workers, those child laborers, are further away. It's harder to imagine their plight. Here, the people who are experiencing this plight are in the same car as us, and we are still turning a blind eye.
But you know the argument, and I'm sure you've heard it. They keep the rates down. They have better service. They keep their cars cleaner. I mean, you hear all these arguments, and they're easier to actually get. And you say what to them?
I say, you know, there are ways to achieve the same things through regulation, through safe, good wage work that leads to stable lives. It doesn't, you know, exploitation and convenience are not two sides of the same coin. They don't necessarily go together.
Vina Dubal here with us in studio again as associate professor at UC Hastings College of the Law. Sam Harnett's also with us, Silicon Valley reporter who's been covering this. You may have heard him earlier this morning. Sam Harnett, let me go right to the chase here. We're talking about fewer medallions, and we're talking about people in some cases who aren't even making what would be minimum wage.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really, I mean, I guess I've always looked at this, you know, you have on one hand the tax industry, which is heavily regulated, has to follow certain rules, and then you have these new companies that come on that aren't following the rules. And it's pretty obvious that it's going to be very difficult for taxi drivers to make a living. So I've been following this, you know, since the inception of these companies, Lyft and Uber. And it was interesting to watch, like, the whole transition, because in the beginning, I feel like there was this sense that these companies are obviously going to be regulated. And then as the years went by and things continued not to happen, you sort of saw a lot of anger and pushback in the taxi industry now kind of turned to despair. So the piece I did this morning, like, you know, going to Green Cab, it was...
But what kind of regulations? I mean, it comes to that, doesn't it? I mean...
Yeah, and I think a lot of the thing is just, if you look at the numbers, right, like Uber and Lyft, there's no cap on how many cars they can put on the street. So you can flood the streets with tons of cars.
And this is also a big part of the whole equation we're talking about is congestion.
Oh, absolutely. There's all that cost that we have to bear. You know, San Francisco has to bear its streets being busier. And that's the whole idea with like regulating the taxi industry, right, is that you want safe streets. The taxis fill a necessary role in society in terms of transportation. So if they can just flood with as many cars as they want, then the rates are going to keep going down, which, again, as Vina pointed out, is great for the consumer. But you got to think about the person doing the work, which is why I'm interested in this whole story and how I think it fits into this reporting on the tech industry, is that it's really a story about consumption. It's really a lot of these platforms are about changing the way that we consume things, changing the way we think about consumption.
It's another gig economy question, really.
Big time. Yeah, and especially with this one. So I did another story about Hustle, which I think really plays an interesting role in this whole thing. You know, Mark's here. He's a cab driver. It's kind of a profession. It's his livelihood. And these companies like Lyft and Uber market themselves as a place to have a side hustle, which there's this kind of positive spin on the marketing, which is like, oh, we can all have an extra job and make extra money. But really what we're doing is replacing like long-term stable jobs with a side hustle. So I feel like that whole aspect of how these companies are marketing themselves is something positive, when really having to hustle traditionally meant like, you know, you had to do this just to survive.
Sam Harnett again is Silicon Valley reporter for KQED. I'm looking at a comment here from a listener named Matt who says, let's get your response if I could, Sam, and then we'll talk to Mark Gruberg. He says, I think Uber drivers and taxis are in similar situations. Our rates get cut and there's no cap on drivers. Uber's cut is a service fee, which passengers don't see. We work long hours, sometimes for $10 an hour before taxes and expenses.
So, yeah, I think that there is a similarity in the sense that I would say like it wasn't the greatest job, which Mark can talk to when I interviewed him. It was a taxi driver as a way to make a lower middle class living. With Uber and Lyft, I think you've also seen in the beginning drivers made a ton of money because these companies had venture capital. They didn't really care about the profits in the beginning and drivers were making a lot of money. But you've seen the rates cut consistently. And now Uber and Lyft drivers – I was doing a story where I sat down with a Lyft driver at tax time, and when he crunched his numbers and he finally saw, you know, he took into account the depreciation of his car and his expenses, he found he was making way less than minimum wage.
Yeah, if you're going to rewrite the code, you have to take all that into consideration if you want some kind of equal playing field here. And the taxis really have a great deal more problem with insurance requirements and, particularly getting inspected because their colors are out there and their logos are out there and so forth. Let's talk to Mark Gruberg. Mark Gruberg, again, is a San Francisco cab driver for Green Cab. Also, how long have you been driving a cab, Mark?
I actually drove a cab in New York City for some brief periods in the 1970s, and I started driving a cab here in San Francisco in 1983.
You go way back, and also you're a board member and have been for a number of years for the San Francisco Taxi Workers Alliance, so you can speak for a lot of the cab drivers. What do they want here? What would they like to see?
What they would like to see is a decent job with decent conditions, with decent earnings, and above all, they would like to see a level playing field so that they could compete fairly against companies that are so wildly under-regulated that you can practically say that they're not regulated at all, especially since the CPUC, which is their regulator, as opposed to the MTA, which is our regulator. The CPUC does virtually no enforcement. Last week, they even reduced the amount that they charge the TNCs, that is Uber and Lyft, in regulatory fees, which are used for enforcement, even though they're not doing the enforcement in the first place. So there are huge issues here. And, you know, this is not a matter of the free market picking winners and losers. This is a government-created crisis owing to the fact that two types of service that are providing essentially the same service are being regulated in very, very different ways to the detriment of the taxi industry.
What do you say, though, to the argument that the taxi industry has to get caught up with the new technology? It's not there. It needs a new app other than Flywheel, or it needs, you know, some way that people can just summon a cab with quicker alacrity and do it better and more effectively?
Well, that's actually an irony there, because we were actually there before Uber and Lyft. Taxi industry was using apps. My own company, Green Cab, was using an app called Cabulous back in 2009. That Cabulous app has now been renamed Flywheel, and it's the main taxi app in San Francisco. Most of all of the cab drivers use it. Passengers tell me that it's as convenient as, you know, using Uber and Lyft, plus the fact that you get a knowledgeable, experienced driver who knows their way around the streets. So, you know, this isn't a question of, you know, one side having superior technology. It's a question of one side having a regulatory advantage, and also the fact that they are underpricing their service below cost as, you know, a way of destroying competition and destroying the taxi industry. Uber lost $4.5 billion last year, an unheard of number. They are subsidizing their drivers. They are subsidizing the fares. And they hope to get rid of the competition and then have the field to themselves.
I'm going to bring in our listeners, and let me do that by inviting our callers and just mention that medallions are down. I think you at Green Cab went from 19 to 6. There are many issues here about people's livelihood, but also about what's happening vis-a-vis the gig economy. We do want to hear from you, our listeners, and let me tell you how you can join the program. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. Join us now if you have questions or comments or something you'd like to add to the conversation. Again, you can call us at 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or post any questions or comments you have right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Let me go, before I go to calls and emails, go back to you, Sam Harnett, just for a moment here, and let's talk about what's happening. The taxi industry is striking back. I mean, they're consolidating. There's a lot that's happening. Update us.
Well, yeah, as you said, you know, there's consolidation in the taxi cab industry. And, you know, in 2016, Yellow Cab went bankrupt. A couple companies now have been bought by the same company. I don't know. There's a lot of changes. But as Mark said, I mean, if you have this unfair playing field, if you have a set number of medallions, I'm not sure. I think it's 1,500 medallions right now. Is that right, Mark?
It's a little above that.
Yeah. So you got
not all in operation.
Right. So you have 1,500 medallions. On the other side, you have an endless stream of cars. Like, it would really be difficult to compete. And so there's been a lot of lawsuits, right? I mean, the taxi industry has tried to sue to get the regulation to be sort of equal. And those suits haven't panned out. And what I'd say is, in a lot of this, the big question here is, like, how much do we believe in that technology can solve our problems? How much do we believe that technology is going to deliver a utopia, and that it can happen just through, you know, the Silicon Valley's, like, innovate and disrupt model, versus, like, oh, if we actually want to have changes, you know, going through a democratic avenue as opposed. So it's kind of like, I mean, how much do we believe that this is just going to, if you make an app, you're somehow going to get fix society?
Well, we're getting some pushback here, and let me give you some examples of what we're hearing, and we'll hear, no doubt, from Vina Dubal on this and Mark Ruberg, and then I'll go to your calls. Let me give you some samples here of what we're hearing. Ben writes, what do taxi drivers expect? Change can be painful, but it is necessary when businesses get that complacent. Another listener tweets, if Uber and Lyft were so bad, we wouldn't have people wanting to drive for them, and we wouldn't want to have them driving for us. They are cheaper and better, so it displaces inefficient industries. End of story. And Corey writes, I have sympathy for the individual taxi drivers, but none whatsoever for the industry. You had a 50-plus year monopoly, and you blew it. Here's what taxi companies should have done, and here's what Uber and Lyft do. Have clean cars, not talk on the phone, keep reservations, solicit passenger feedback, have credit card machines that actually work, and give me a receipt, but too late. The consumer will always go for the better product. There's a kind of motif in all this, Vina Dubon?
Yeah. I just want to be clear that for me, this is not about taxi versus Uber. This is about the failure to regulate the chauffeur industry and the failure to create secure, safe work. And the two types of regulations we need, whether they're on taxis or whether they're on Uber, are vehicle caps and fare regulations. So yes, maybe there needed to have been some kind of innovation in the taxi industry beforehand, but Uber and and Lyft didn't need to be the catalyst to make that happen. In fact, workers like Mark were pushing for many years for things like centralized dispatch to make it easier for consumers to get a taxi cab. And so just saying that this is so great because I don't want to have to deal with the inefficiencies of the taxi system is again forgoing all of the problematics of the economic situations that the drivers really are subject to, and so in so much as the problem here is a lack of regulations, I think in many ways Uber represents all of our anxieties about advanced capitalism. You know.
I want to hear from you, Mark Gruber, but let me hear from a listener, and that's Scott in San Rafael. Scott, go ahead.
Hi. My question has to do with just the artificial cap of putting taxi medallions and limiting the number. Mm-hmm. It seems that by doing that with supply and demand, you're artificially raising the price. And all you're doing with the Ubers and the Lyfts is you're increasing to a market amount of supply to reach the demand.
Now, there are a number of people out there who may not know what a medallion is or how it operates. Sam Harnett, can you help us here? And then...
Yeah, the medallion's a license to operate a cab. It used to be awarded on seniority. You'd get on a list and you'd have to wait a bunch of years. And now it changed over.
Used to cost $250,000. It'd be worth a lot of money.
Right, but now not so much.
The pushback we're hearing, Mark Gruber, what do you say to that? They're saying essentially a taxi. In fact, here's a listener on that, and we'll get your response from him. Bob, go ahead.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My name is Bob Novelli. I'm calling from San Francisco, and I have a commentary and a question. I became a believer in Uber and Lyft a couple years ago when I flew into New York for business. I had always taken cabs, but I'll tell you, the Uber driver had a clean car. I had a fixed amount for the trip in from JFK. I got a beautiful receipt on my email for my business expenses. And quite frankly, the service is 20 times better. My question is to the company.
Before you go to your question, I'd like to get Mark Gruber's response to what you just said. Mark?
Well, I'm happy to hear that in this particular instance, this passenger had a good experience. We all hope to have a good experience, but we also hope that the worker that is providing that experience, you know, has a decent job, has a decent living, has a decent future. These jobs with Uber and Lyft are literally dead-end jobs. These companies are going to go to self-driving cars as soon as they can get them on the road. There are people who are doing this now, and most of them, many of them, doing it on a very part-time basis so that they don't depend for a living on their earnings, and therefore they are willing to do it for the crumbs that really exist in both the taxi industry and driving for Uber and Lyft. And this is not a good situation for workers, for our society. We have to have decent jobs with decent benefits and, reasons for people to want to do them on a full-time basis, like, as most cab drivers are.
Mark Gruberg, again, is a San Francisco cab driver for Green Cab and also a board member for the San Francisco Taxi Workers Alliance. And you had a question, Bob.
Yes. Mark's point is a good one, and it leads to my question to the college professor. I'm agnostic about whether I would take a cab or an Uber if I got the good service. But if you think regulation is the answer, what's to prevent the cab industry from becoming Amtrak?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
I think that was a little jab at Amtrak.
Amtrak was regulated, and after it was regulated, became poor service. And you know the rest of the story about Amtrak.
I didn't know what track you were on there. I'm sorry to say, but
I think it's important.
Vina Dubal.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that. In industries or in cities that deregulated the cab industry in the 80s and early 90s, those industries just became re-regulated because it was impossible to make money without vehicle caps and fare regulation. And so we've sort of seen the failure of those attempts. And I think eventually we will see the failure of the lack of regulation in Uber and Lyft. But what it's going to take to get there is economic devastation. And to the earlier caller's point who said, you know, people wouldn't be doing this work if they didn't like it or if they weren't able to make a living around it. And that assumption about these workers as particular types of rational economic actors is just inherently flawed. I have talked to so many drivers who, for various reasons, were pulled into the industry, promises of bonuses, told they can make X amount of money, and in the end, they weren't able to, but they were tethered to their vehicles because they either bought a car or were tied into some scam leasing system and needed to continue to drive in hopes that maybe their hopes and wishes and what they were promised would be fulfilled. And it's very hard once you get out of this work to get into other things. I had one guy tell me he was a union carpenter, and he said he used to laugh at the Walmart workers and say, why are they doing that? It's awful work. And then he broke his back and he couldn't do carpentry any work, and he started driving for Uber and Lyft, and he said that that was all that was available to him. For a lot of people who really want to work, this is all that is available to them, and this is bad labor. It's just, it's incredibly insecure.
Well, here's Karen who says, I was an Uber driver for a year. It's difficult to make money at it. I sympathize with the drivers and always tip well. Uber just uses its drivers to gather data to help plan autonomous cars. They don't care about the drivers. Shannon says, emphasize, please, what Mark said about Uber drivers being subsidized. Okay. You just did that emphasis, Shannon. Thank you for that. And we'll get some more callers on here. Here's Victor, who is a cab driver. Victor, you're on.
Hi, this is Victor, and I was asked kind of to speak about, I've been doing this job on and off for over 30 years, and I'm now trying to learn computer programming to do a different job. So maybe Uber has done me a service in a different kind of way. But I really think there's a huge injustice here where the market is flooded with Wall Street capital that is subsidizing these cars in a temporary way, that trying to attain their monopoly status. And really, you have what is a billion-dollar industry using San Francisco as a laboratory to build its business and its stock, its IPO, while not giving anything back to the community and exploiting a vast number of drivers from all over the Northern California region. So I really think there should be a cap on the number of TNCs, that's what Uber cars are called, and Lyft cars on the streets. They cannot just flood the market with a massive amount of things like it's analogous to what happens in very developing economies where people are like put at the service of a few rich people, and you have like thousands of people, whether there's technology involved or not. And as far as this infatuation with technology goes, all you have to do is look at your phone. It looks beautiful, but when you check the weather, it does not match the weather outside. When I check my weather app, it does not always correspond with the weather. So technology is not infallible, and the cabs actually had the technology, as Mark said, before Uber. So that's just
Victor, I must confess, in all my years of broadcasting, I didn't know that we would wind up talking about the weather when talking about technology. But I appreciate very much hearing from you, and thank you for the call. Doreen says, the demise of taxis means the demise of wheelchair-accessible taxis. Uber provides no wheelchair-accessible options. People with disabilities are being left behind and forgotten. That's true. I believe that's
right.
True. Yeah. The other thing is, I've heard some stories just recently about people who called an Uber and asked to be taken over to Marin County, and the driver showed up and said, I'm not going to Marin County, sorry, you know, it's off my beat or whatever. So there are so many problems that we bring up when we discuss this, and we're going to hear from some more of our callers. Let me go to Bob next. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Here's the dirty little secret the public doesn't know about Lyft and Uber drivers. Uber will allow a driver to drive 14 hours. Lyft will allow a driver to drive 14 hours, but nothing prevents them from turning off Lyft and turning on Uber. Some of these drivers are driving around the clock. They come in from Modesto. They come in from Reno. They come in from all over. They drive like crazy around the clock, 3 or 4 days, don't get any sleep, take their drugs, stay awake, and one day a family will lose their lives on the way to the airport. I guarantee it.
Well, Bob, it's a grim thought, but unfortunately it has veracity to it, I'm afraid. Maybe you can address this, Sam. Sam Harnett, I mean, the fact of the matter is some of these, well, taxi drivers have to conform to punching clocks and all the rest of it, but some of these drivers, he's right, are driving. They're driving themselves like interns or residents used to drive themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a lot. I mean, what Vina was talking about, the economic desperation. I mean, the Uber and Lyft drivers I've talked to, And again, I think it's also important to remember that a lot of times they'll be very happy when you talk to them, and they'll seem very happy. You have to remember they're being rated by you. So there's this kind of pressure to kind of give you good service and be happy because they're going to get rated. And then a lot of times there's a lot of turnover. So sometimes you'll get a Lyft or Uber driver who's only been doing it for 2 weeks, and they haven't really crunched the numbers yet and seen how little they're making. So I think and then also because of the economic desperation, they're just trying to make as much money as they can, and there's a very low bar to entry. So once they get on, you know, maybe they have a big loan payment to make, so they're going to drive, like the caller said, as much as they possibly can.
And again, Sam Harnett is our Silicon Valley reporter for KQED. And talk about Silicon Valley. Paul raises an interesting point here. He says, lost in this conversation is that a European court ruling for four countries concluded Uber is not a software company. Yeah. It is a taxi company and should be regulated as one. Bay Area governments chime in on every event. Why nothing but silence on this precedent, Sam?
And just to chime in, as someone who's covering Silicon Valley, I even think the moniker of tech or the tech industry is very – it's very problematic.
Inappropriate.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of times, like, you know, what is Google? Well, it's a data collection company, you could argue, or same with Facebook. I mean, I think so calling these companies, looking at what makes them money and calling and using that to identify them is, instead of using technology, which is something we have we're fetishizing technology. We as a society, for whatever reason, you know, have this kind of blind faith in technology. So it gives us branding to these companies that makes them look more innovative and disruptive than maybe they actually are.
And again, Sam Harnett knows of what he speaks since he's our Silicon Valley reporter. Let me try to get another caller in here with seconds left. Val, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Val from San Francisco.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm calling in support of the Flywheel app because it works just as beautifully as the Uber app. You get licensed drivers. I've never had a bad experience on it. They know where they're going. Uber drivers are often in San Francisco, not from the city, and they don't know where they're going. And I stopped using Uber about a year ago and switched exclusively to Flywheel. And for all the people that are saying that, you know, cabs don't work as well, I urge them to try the app.
Okay, Val, excuse me. I'm going to have to break in here because we're coming up on the clock here, but I thank you for that. Validation for Flywheel, and there's been a lot of validation for taxi cab drivers here. Thank you all for being with us. Sam Harnett, Silicon Valley reporter for KQED.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Vina Dubal, associate professor, UC Hastings College of Law.
Thank you.
And Mark Ruberg, San Francisco cab driver for Green Cab and board member of the San Francisco Taxi Workers Alliance. Thank you. Thank you all. Quorum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauberg, Susan Britton, and Angela Corral. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer today is Steve Esfregato, our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Interns are Lisa Arbatman and Ali Wollner. Managing editor, Ethan Lindsay. Executive producer, Holly Kernan. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.